And now, welcome to Who's Talking on WCHL with D.G. Martin. Interesting guests, enlightening conversation. And now, here's your host, D.G. Martin.
Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Well, most of us know Coach Lefty Driesell as the legendary basketball coach, but now he's an author. Well, sort of. He's responsible for the rewriting of the new book that was titled ACC Basketball. It's a book about the conference's first 20 years. The new printing of the book has been revised to correct an account of the recruitment of Charlie Scott. And Coach Driesell will tell us, I've got him, and I'm going to ask him to tell us two stories. One, the true story of the recruitment of Charlie Scott, and also how he was able to get this new book revised and into a new printing to have the correction made. Coach, welcome.
Well, thank you, DG. I'm glad you asked me that because I need to explain to people that have ever read it. And I called Dean and his wife and Linnea and told them that I never spit in Dean's hand. That is the most ridiculous thing I've ever read.
Coach, most people haven't read the book, haven't heard the story.
Yeah.
Don't know, but just basically, this is about the first 20 years of ACC basketball, and you weren't even a part of ACC basketball until the last year or two of the first 20 years.
I know. I mean, this is something that happened at Davidson.
But you're one of the main characters, and one of them is the part of the story. This is about the sort of speedy emergence of African-American players into the ACC, and one of the first big stars was Charlie Scott, whom you'd recruited to go to Davidson. And so the story in the book, tell us what the book said, and then tell us the true story.
Well, the book says that I went up to Laurinburg to sign.
Let me just, Charlie. I was a coach, I apologize for interrupting. The book said, it used to say.
Yeah, it used to say, okay. It used to say that I went up to Laurinburg to sign Charlie Scott, who had already signed with me, but it didn't mean anything at that time. They didn't have a national letter of intent, and so there was no letter of intent, so I didn't go there to sign him, you know, but that's what they said. I went up there to sign him, and he turned me down and signed with Dean. And then when Dean was, and I passed, Dean stuck his hand out and said, "Listen, no hard feelings, right, Lefty?" And I spit in his hand. Which is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard of. I've never spit on anybody. And had I spit on Dean's hand, he would have probably hit me. If somebody spit on me, I am not going to let him get by with it. So it was ridiculous. And the whole story is kind of slanted because Charlie had signed with me, put down a $100 deposit, and Charlie and I, in fact, I talked to him on the phone 2 days ago. He calls me about his son Shannon's play at Ohio State. He and I are good friends, and, you know, him going to North Carolina knocked me out of the Final Four, which I never made a couple of times. But Charlie was a great young man, and I was elated to have him come into Maryland, but he changed his mind and went to North Carolina, which he had a right to do.
He came. You didn't have him. You had him coming to Davidson, not Maryland.
I mean, yeah, Davidson. What did I say? North Carolina, whatever. But anyway, the thing that upset me about it, and I never read his book, and then, you know, I don't read books about guys that don't know anything about basketball, and this guy's a professor or something, and I understand he was a professor at Maryland now, and his brother played at UVA. He said something about my graduation rate.
Well, let's talk about
Four of my players graduated and his students did. And because 84% of my players I coached at Maryland that stayed 4 years graduated.
I want to get to that part of it in just a minute, but let's finish up on the your version. I'd just say the true version of the recruitment of Charlie Scott and you insisted that you didn't spit on Coach Smith's hand, and
the author claimed that Terry Holland told him that. When Terry Holland said he didn't tell him that, And, you know, I've got a letter from Terry saying he didn't say it. I've got a letter from the author, Wally Walker's brother, who was a good player for Terry at UVA. I got a letter from him saying he made a mistake, and, you know, so I don't know what else, and I don't know why he put it in there.
Well,
but he says, you know, he was a professor at Maryland from what I just learned. And, you know, a lot of professors don't like basketball coaches because they think they get paid too much. And, you know, I wasn't paid that much. I paid about $14,000 when I was at Maryland. When I first started, I ended up making about $90,000. Now the coach there makes $2 million. But anyway, I don't know why he would write that because, you know, he was supposedly a professor at the University of Maryland.
Well, Coach.
But his whole book is slanted toward, you know, UVA and Maryland, where academics were no good, and I was no good as a coach or as an educator and so forth. So it really disturbed me, okay? There's several things in the book that disturb me.
Well, I want to, again, on the most important thing is the account of the recruitment story has been changed significantly in the new print of this book. And I think it's fair to say that you as you told the story, you didn't, Coach Smith offered his hand. You have to confess that you didn't, or you've confessed, I think, that you didn't warmly embrace him at that point, that y'all have good friends now, but at that moment you weren't ready to shake his hand.
No, you know, I can't remember. That was, what, 30 years ago? But I know I never spit in his hand. I probably did not shake his hand. I don't even remember running into him, to tell you the truth. But, you know, I may not have shaken his hand. I don't know. But I know I never spit in his hand.
Well, I think one of the things, and this is one of the reasons I wanted to have the chance to visit with you, is that I think everybody I've talked to does not believe that you spit in his hands, and now that the book has been corrected, I think we put that matter to rest. You know, basketball coach. I'm visiting with Coach Lefty Driesell, talking about basketball and about the conflict. One of the things that's, you know, basketball coaches just get, people just want to barrage them with criticism, whatever they do. And right now we're in the, I don't know whether you saw the Carolina Florida State game last week. Which was not something we want to, you know, those folks in Chapel Hill want to remember very long. But I watched at the end of the game and I saw the two coaches huddle when there was maybe 30 seconds left to go in the game. And it's quite clear that the Florida State had achieved a magnificent victory over North Carolina, and the fans were going to mob the court. And so the two coaches huddled and, reached a very sensible agreement to get the Carolina players, off the court so that they wouldn't have to fight through the mob that was going to be on the court in a minute. I mean, it just made perfect sense to me. And now Roy Williams is suffering a whole bunch of criticism. Like, you know, he left the guys who were playing on the court, that he didn't do this, he didn't do that, that the only people who can stop a game are the officials. It's like, you know, in my mind, the coach did exactly the right thing. He was taking account, trying to, you know, the best under fiery circumstances and really extraordinarily difficult circumstances for him, having lost a game, have been wiped out in a game that he should have won. He was thinking about
his players. No, he shouldn't have won. You never should win a game. You could win a game.
You could win. Well, but I mean, he would have. It was a game that you would look at it saying, "This is a game we would hope we would have won." And
right.
And you know,
well,
that you're
the only thing. The only thing is, I've kind of felt sorry for Roy. I would have taken my regulars out and played all our subs for the last 10 minutes. But anyway, I think the criticism probably that I've read was that he left the team out there, and he left. It's like that captain of the ship had just sunk. He left the ship. You know, Roy probably should have stayed out there with the five guys that was on the court. If he had it to do again, I'm sure that's what he would have done.
Right.
In fact, I read where he apologized to the players that he left out there. So, but in a situation like that, there's a lot of panic. You don't make good decisions. And that was probably the only thing people were critical of him, is leaving his players out there and he leaving.
Well, I think you're probably right, but there's also a group of people ready to jump on people who make decisions. Yeah, you could criticize any decision that somebody would make, but you do the best you can in the line of fire. And I thought Coach did better than I would have done.
Right.
I would have stayed there and had a fight with them. I would have probably.
You wouldn't have spit on them, though.
I don't know. I visited with Coach Lefty Driesell. We're talking about basketball and about a recent book on ACC basketball. And what I wanted to do was to visit with my coach and be sure that his version is on the record. And that's what he and I will be doing after this short break.
You're listening to Who's Talking on News Talk 1360 WCHL with your host, D.G. Martin. And now, once again, here's D.G.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is Coach Lefty Driesell, and we're talking about it in the context of a new book published by UNC Press called ACC Basketball. And if you join us late, Coach Driesell took issue with one of the we're going to talk about some of the other things he takes issues with in the book, but primarily a part of the early version of the book, which said that Coach Driesell had spit in Coach Dean Smith's hand at the time of the recruitment, in connection with the recruitment of Charlie Scott. And that story has been blown apart, and the book has been reprinted to reflect a more nearly correct version. Coach, you and I have different views about the rest of this book, mainly except for a few things. Well, I think you've ignored some of the things where you're treated that you're a central character and treated pretty well. One of the main stories in this book, really the opening story in the book, compares games between Maryland and South Carolina at the very beginning of the ACC in the early 1950s, and then a game between the same two teams 20 years later. In the first game down at South Carolina in 1950-something, 51, I guess, or 52, hardly anybody came and no news reports. 20 years later, when you're the coach at Maryland, 17 years later, I guess, in 1971, this is one of, you're an early coach there. You hadn't really gotten your recruits going. South Carolina's number two in the nation, coached by Frank McGuire, and they come to Maryland and the stands are full. And it's one of the, Maryland, which was rebuilding, I guess, under your leadership, upset the number two team in the country.
No, we were playing them at South Carolina.
First in South Carolina.
Yeah, right.
And you lost in South Carolina. What happened down there?
Oh, we had a big fight. The only time I ever got hit by a player, John Ribbock hit me. I was trying to take one of the South Carolina players off of one of my players, and I guess he thought I was fighting, so he hit me in the mouth and bloodied my lip. And so they called the game off. In fact, Howard White was playing for me, set the South Carolina scoring record that night. And he got some more points, but they called the game off with about 5 minutes left. And it was a big fight, and, it was a nasty thing. But, so then when they came back to play us in Maryland, I made a statement after the game. I said, they got to come back and play us down there. We'll beat them down there. And so they made a big thing out of that, and Frank decided, well, maybe I don't want to go there. Everybody else start a fight up there, which we never would have. But there was a lot of controversy about it. I don't remember what he said in the book. You tell me, because you bring it up.
After the confrontation, it says Driesell. This is after the game was over. Paul Dietzel was the athletic director down there, and he banned reporters from the visitors' locker room, so you weren't going to have a chance to talk about it, but here's what it says. It said, with bruises on his lip and cheek that clearly visible, Drizzell defiantly held an informal press conference. And speaking with evident emotion, he called the altercation a disgrace and accused McGuire of smiling while they were going wild out there. And he, that is Coach Drizzell, said, if I was Frank McGuire, I would not bring my team to College Park. And McGuire responded with his own provocative statements. He said, I don't care what Lefty has to say. There are a million Lefty Drizzells in the world. He said, you won't see the day that I'm afraid of him. Following day, Drizzell repeated his warning and announced that he might protest the game to try to nullify the outcome. And this is what your quote is saying. Hell, there were 5 minutes left. We might have caught them. But the ACC declared that the game, which had been shortened because of the fight, was official, and South Carolina got the win. But what did when? I mean, what did you remember? I mean, that's a long time ago. But when they came to Maryland over the protest of Frank McGuire, he didn't want to play. He didn't want to come, but the ACC made him come. What strategy did you develop to try to beat the number two team in the country?
Well, I'm going to tell you, that was sort of the game that got us going at Maryland, because I hadn't recruited McMillan and Elmore and all those players at that time. And so when they came there, Frank had this philosophy that if he was ahead, he always liked the 2-3 zone. As long as he was ahead, he wasn't going to come out of his 2-3 zone. You know, and so we got ahead of them. I think it was 2-0. So we decided to just hold the ball and let him stay in his zone. So we hit a basket right at the half to make it 4-2. And then now we were ahead of him. So he came out and played us man for man the second half. And we ended up scoring, I think it was 6 points in 12 seconds. And we beat him on a last second shot by Jim O'Brien. So that was, you know, and then, of course, the fans, you know, they came out of on the floor, tore down my basket and everything else. They went crazy. And so that was about the whole story.
Well, really. Did you have the plan to slow it down? I mean, you know, you, as I remember, you had a game plan every time about what, you know, what you're going to do. Did you have the game? There was a part of the game plan to slow it down?
Oh, yeah. We were going to hold it as long as he stayed in his zone, we were just going to played them. If we'd have played them man for man, or they'd have come after us, they would have beaten us easy, just like they did down there. So, I mean, you know, my strategy was we'd just hold the ball, and luckily we got behind at the first of the game. I think we were behind 4-2 or something like that. I don't know, but he wouldn't come out of the zone. We knew that. So we just got to Howard White held the ball at half court until the half was, you know, ready to end. And we took a last-second shot run with about 2 seconds in the half. And then we went up to, you know, with 4-2 or whatever. And then so he played us man for man the second half. And I think we beat him 22-21 or something like that.
It went into overtime. I guess this is, at least according to the book, tied 23-23 at the end of regulation. South Carolina took a 30-25 lead in overtime with just 24 seconds left in the game, but Maryland scored 3 quick baskets on an uncontested layup and 2 steals.
Yeah, that's right. We stole the inbounds pass twice.
And this is what Coach Drizzell is quoted as saying, good Lord had to be with us the way we did it.
Well, that's and, true. Good Lord with me all the time.
And the other thing, I don't know whether this interested me, Coach, says that the pep band played Amen. Maryland fans dashed to the floor to celebrate the improbable victory. And, you know, I thought that took me back to watching the Florida State fans, you know, come down onto the court after the – I mean, that's what fans do when they –
I know.
Delighted
it's
with
bad,
upset.
But I don't know how you can control it. I'm sure Florida State tried to, and we probably did then. But when those fans come out there, it's really ridiculous because somebody could get hurt.
Well, Coach, it says that the band played Amen, and that got to be your theme song.
That was our theme song. In fact, I was going to call Mark Turgeon and tell him he ought to start playing that again, because there's been some since Gary left, he never would do anything that I did. So, you know, it's been some write-ups in the paper. He helped Mark Turgeon go back to singing.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Well, was this the first time? Was this South Carolina game the first time they did it? Or did
I don't remember. It might have been. It was my second year there, so it probably was. But from then on, and I know one year, Dean told his team, he came to Coldfield House, and look, if you beat these guys, I'm going to sing Amen after the game.
Oh, really?
So they beat us, and he went in and sung Amen in the locker room.
Oh, really?
So that Amen was a great thing, though. But
I don't remember. There's nothing like that when you're coaching at Davidson, anything from high school. Where did that Amen come from?
I don't know. Maybe the pep band just played it that night. I don't remember how it got started, but they used to, every time we got a game, it was like Red Auerbach lighting up his cigar, you know.
Well, I mean, that got to be kind of your theme song. I mean,
yeah,
if you think of Amen, you think of Lefty Driesell.
Yeah, that's true.
Did it go with you when you went to the, James Madison? And
No.
Maryland. And,
it was Maryland, yeah.
Coach Driesell. I'm visiting with Coach Lefty Driesell, and we're talking about we're talking about basketball and his coaching career, but it's in the context of a new book, ACC Basketball. And if you did join us late, the purpose of the program is to let everybody know that the original edition of that book has been corrected to eliminate the statement that Coach Driesell had spit in Coach Dean Smith's hand. He didn't. He's gathered the documentation to prove that he didn't do it, and the book has been corrected. But he and I'll be talking about other things after this short break.
You're listening to Who's Talking on News Talk 1360 WCHL with your host, D.G. Martin. And now, once again, here's D.G.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with my coach, Lefty Driesell. Coach, it's always a treat to be with you, and I thank you for giving me this time. As we've said earlier, this is in the context of new book, ACC Basketball, and we've taken care of one of the things that you disagreed with, which reported that you had spit in Coach Dean Smith's hand, and you said you didn't do it. You proved it. The book has been the new printing of the book is, I'm told by UNC Press, has corrected that version. But you have a disagreement with other reports in the book as it criticized you for not being attentive to the academic performance of your players. And I don't.
Right.
I believe. And we mentioned that our good friend Barry Jacobs, in his book, had also mentioned this. And I believe you're more. This is all opinion, so there's no way you can. I mean, this is the author's opinion, but you disagree violently.
Well,
I
don't disagree. I got the statistics.
All right, well,
I went and dug up my. Okay, from Davidson, you know, he was saying that I didn't care about academics at Davidson or Maryland. Okay, at Davis, I got the stats right here from Emo Parker, who you know, 46 of the 47 players. It stayed until our senior year. 98% of them graduated. There was only one that didn't graduate. 46 of my lettermen graduated. 22% are doctors now, okay, or were at the time of year. They probably still are, maybe retired. 46 lettermen, 26% are attorneys. 59% attended and finished graduate school. Does that look like somebody doesn't care about academics? That's Davidson, okay? At Maryland and Davidson, 32 of my players attended and finished graduate school. 13 have become lawyers. One is presently a graduate student working on an advanced degree in education. And two have been Rhodes Scholars. Now, I don't think there's any coach in the country that has coached two scholars. Danny Carroll at Davidson and Tom McMillan is the only Rhodes Scholar in the history since 1905 at the University of Maryland. And they said something about my graduation rate at Maryland. Well, my graduation rate at Maryland was 84% of all the players that stayed 4 years. Now, that does not count. I had 17 guys that transferred but were eligible to go to other schools. I got them listed right here. And then there was Barry Yates and Brad Davis and Buck Williams who went hardship, you know, before they were seniors. And Buck has since come back and graduated. And also Larry Gibson has graduated. When I left there, he had not graduated. He is graduating, and so is Charles Pittman. So it's about 85, 86%, maybe higher than that, of my players that stayed 4 years, not the one. And I see I had two players die. The NCAA gave you 5 years. You know, Chris Patton died and Leonard Byers died. And I don't count them in as having a chance to graduate. And at Maryland, Maryland has placed at least one player on an academic All-ACC team or academic All-AC honor roll for 12 of the 17 years I was at Maryland. We had at least one player. Four times Maryland has been represented on an academic All-American team. That was Tom. They've only had three players make academic All-American. And Tom McMillan made it 3 years. Greg Manning made it 1 year. And a guy named Matt Rowe made it 1 year. They played for Gary. And see, two of my players, McMillan and Greg Manning, won an NCAA scholarship, which they only give out 10 a year for all sports, men and women. So, you know, these people that say my players were bad, poor students at Maryland, they state that Leonard Bysett was a disgrace, that he was 21 credits short. Well, let me tell you something. He was taking 15 credits his senior year, and an academic advisor told him to drop them or take incompletes. And Leonard came to see me and said, "Hey, coach, I can pass these courses. But if you know, he signed a multi-million dollar contract. He tried out with every NBA team, so he missed a lot of classes. And he was playing in all-star games and things like that. And so had he passed 15 credits the last semester, he would have been 6 credits short. And he was in summer school when he died. He was going to get his degree. So Leonard Byers was not a bad student. He was a great artist, and he was majoring in interior design. And, I mean, that really burns me up when they say Leonard Byers was a bad student, because he wasn't. And they say my players didn't graduate. But both of these guys talk about, you know, my last year when Leonard died, my players were doing poorly. Well, that's not true. I never had a player flunk out of Davidson or Maryland.
Well, Coach, was there one of the things that there was a group or a couple of guys or one or two people at Maryland who jumped on the tragedy of Leonard Byers to get you? I mean, and are they? I mean, is that where all of this stuff is coming from? About how?
Yeah, that's where it started.
And how did that? I mean, why? What were they after you for? What do they really want?
Well, I never have said this too much, but the chancellor wanted to hire his coach. And if I was so bad, why did they give me a 10-year contract the year before Leonard Byers died? I mean, I don't understand that. All of a sudden, I'm a bad coach, and he wants a new coach. But see, he's the one that messed it up. I mean, you know,
What did he have against you? I mean,
no, I don't know what he had. You know, I told you, I guess he wanted his new coach. You know, he was a new chancellor, and I'd been there 17 years, and, you know, I evidently did a pretty good job of graduating players and winning games. And in fact,
well, had you had a bad year or two?
No. The year they gave me the 10-year contract, we were in the top 10. That was Leonard Byers' junior year. And his senior year, we were, I don't think, 18th in the country. But he just wanted to get his own player, I guess.
I mean, did he have somebody else in mind?
Yeah, he had somebody else, Bob Wade, who was from Baltimore. And he didn't even interview Morgan Wooten, who, if he's going to hire a high school coach, that's who he should have hired. But he hired Bob Wade, didn't interview anybody. And see, he didn't hire him until November. See, I was staying there, and he said they couldn't practice until November the 1st, and, you know, he wouldn't let me practice the team while I was still there, and they weren't going to play any games. You check the record, they did not play any games until the second semester. He was going to, you know, change the whole NCAA, which he didn't know what he was doing, and obviously, and he wanted me out of there, so he put out all these academic accusations and so forth. And
so that's sort of the source. I mean, you try to go back and try to find the source for these authors. They go back into the information that was developed by the chancellor to get the rap on you.
And they didn't check them out, you know.
Well, Coach, I hope you were eloquent in defending your reputation as a coach who did care about academics, and I hope you keep those notes and are ready to give that talk again because it's pretty persuasive.
Oh, I know. Well, I want to write a book.
Well, Coach,
I can't find somebody that trusts to write it and is going to do a good job. But I got some people talking to me about it now. But
we're working. You had the call out. This is Chapel Hill, and there are a lot of unemployed writers here, and you're going to be hearing from them, Coach. They're going to want to help you write this book. But you got to get on this project, and you coached me, you bossed me around a lot, and you told me, all right, if you got an objective, then you got to develop a plan to achieve that objective. Let's write out your plan, and then let's follow it. And so we're going to do that on your book and make you follow your plan.
I'm anxious to get started before I get senile. I'm half senile now.
No, I still talk like that.
I think I can remember enough. I got stats about my academic record at Davidson and Maryland, and, you know, like I say, name any other coaches coached two Rhodes Sox scholars.
I can't name them. And those two guys, there were other smart guys.
In fact, Wayne Huckle should have gotten one if he'd have listened to me. He was a finalist, but the academic advisor there at Davidson, we had a guy on a track team. I don't remember his name, but he was a good candidate too. And see, you can, when you apply for a Rhodes Scholarship, you can either apply in the state where you're going to school or in your hometown state. Well, this kid was from North Carolina, so he applied from North Carolina, and Wayne applied from New Jersey, where you got all in Princeton, Harvard.
That's pretty tough competition.
You know, pretty tough competition, but he was still a finalist.
He still should have gotten it.
Yeah, great. It's hard to get two Rhodes Scholars from one university in the same year, probably.
We're visiting with Coach Lefty Drizel. We're talking about his career and in the context of a new book about ACC basketball. He and I will be right back.
You're listening to Who's Talking on News Talk 1360 WCHL with your host, D.G. Martin. And now, once again, here's D.G.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with Coach Lefty Drizel. We're talking about all kinds of things in his career. But we're doing it primarily because a new book called ACC Basketball, published by UNC Press. Coach Drizel and I have different ideas about the book. I think, except for a few things, it's a pretty good book. Coach Drizel doesn't think very much of it. But one of the things we wanted to be sure got corrected was that there was a report in the original edition of the book that, in connection with the recruitment of Charlie Scott, competition between Coach Drizel at Davidson and Coach Dean Smith here at Carolina, and ultimately Coach Smith won that contest. And the report in the book said that when they met, Coach Drizel had spit in Coach Smith's hand. That was not true, and the book has been revised to reflect the correction. Coach, I wanted to do my part to be sure that folks in Chapel Hill understand that just never happened. But we had a good conversation about other things. One of the things I wanted to talk about, and this came up because of the report in the first chapter of the ACC Basketball about your confrontation with Frank McGuire when he was at South Carolina and you were at Maryland. And some of the folks got things confused about Frank McGuire and Al McGuire, and it brought back my memories of Your great victory over Belmont Abbey when you were coaching at Davidson and Al McGuire was coaching at Belmont Abbey, and then Al McGuire won the national championship at Marquette, and then he became a TV commentator. And after one of your great victories, this is my report, and I want you to correct me on this. After one of your great victories at Maryland, Al McGuire said, "Coach, was this the greatest victory you've ever had?" And you said, according to the story that's going around, you said, "No, Al, my greatest victory was when Davidson beat Belmont Abbey, where you were coaching back in 1962. Any truth to that story?
Did you play in that game, did you? Did you play in that game?
Coach, did I play? Go read the results.
Easy. That's 45 years ago. I can't remember.
Well, Coach,
I probably did say that to Al because he was a character.
The fact that you wouldn't remember, we've been talking earlier about what a bad shooter I was and all of these things. But I put the ball in the basket in that game. We won.
Well, yeah. I'll have to look up that score. I don't remember that.
Of course, they were mostly right there. They were mostly layup shots.
That's your highlight, right?
Well, it was.
I'm going to tell you, Al McGuire had some good teams at Belmont Abbey now.
Well, that's right. But you don't remember any of this. You just say it could be true.
It could be true. Well, I probably said that because I joke around with him a lot.
Well, Coach, what was your greatest? If the Davidson victory over Belmont Abbey was not your greatest event, if your victory in your first game as a college coach over number one ranked Wake Forest was not your greatest event, if your victory over South Carolina, Maryland, when South Carolina was ranked number two and you weren't anywhere close to being ranked, was not your great. What was the high moment of all this, of all your basketball career?
I don't know. It might be that first game at Davidson when we beat Wake Forest, and they ended up third in the country. They won the consolation game in the Final Four, which they used to play that back then.
And that was Lynn Chapel and now Billy Packer. We still remember because he had a long career as a basketball analyst.
But to be honest, Lynn Chapel didn't play that night. I think Bones thought he
No, was. We don't talk about that.
I know.
It's true,
well,
though.
Billy Packer does. He always, when I bring it up to him, Lynn didn't play.
Well, Coach, when we talk about the characters of ACC basketball, we talk about Frank McGuire and then always talk about Bones and talk about you. And so if there were two of the people that we think about as being the colorful coaches, you and Bones are always at the top of the list. Did y'all know each other? Did y'all get along?
In fact, I applied for assistant job over there when I was coaching in high school. I didn't get it, but we were always good friends. I mean, I don't know if I told you this story before because we've talked a lot, but we were going over there to play Wake Forest at Wake Forest. I forget which year it was. But Bones said, "The tickets are not selling for this game. Now, you got to help me out." I said, what can I do, Bones? I can't help you sell tickets. He said, "Well, look, I'm going to come out tomorrow and say that you're a sorry coach and Davidson's got a sorry team and you can't coach a lick. Then I want you to come out the next day and say, 'Look, Bones, what have you done? You can't coach. You got all those players over there and not getting anything out of them, and it'll help the crowd.'" So I did. We both did it, and we sold it out.
So that raises the question: was that what you and Frank McGuire were about when you all filled the co-field house because you all were throwing stuff back and forth? Did you have in the back of your mind, okay?
No, I knew that game was going to sell out. I didn't have to worry about that game selling out.
Well, Coach, we talked about this book, ACC Basketball, by Sam Walker, and you feel like he didn't treat you fairly, but boy, he really didn't think much of Frank McGuire. I mean, he talked about all of the arguments that he had with, and Frank McGuire was one of my heroes growing up, Coach, and so that really hurt my feelings.
Look, Frank McGuire, after I stopped coaching, we went these Nike trips together, he and what is his wife's name? I can't think of it. But we became great friends. In fact, the first time I ever had rack of lamb, I never ate that expensive food. Frank said, "Get some of that rack of lamb, Lefty." So I got it. I love it now. But
he
and I were good friends.
Did the community here at Chapel Hill and then the ACC community treat him unfairly? Is that why he left the ACC? I mean,
no, I think he left because of the 900 rule. I don't know why he left North Carolina.
Huh? I mean, South Carolina.
South Carolina.
I mean, why South Carolina left the ACC.
Left the ACC because of that, yeah. Because he had a kid named Grosso that didn't have 900, and he said, well, his daddy's paying his way. We can still play him. And he played him until the commissioner said he couldn't do it anymore. So I think – but somebody told me that it was Dietzel, the one that really wanted to get out because he couldn't get some guys in school that Clemson was getting in or something. I don't know. But I don't know, you know, why he left South Carolina.
Well, Coach, we made a mistake figuring we could pack all this into 1 hour, but our time's up, and I hope we've done a good job of squelching that rumor that...
Yeah, well, that was very important.
And I thank you for...
But I don't think anybody that knows me, even... my friends at South North Carolina would think I would do something like that. I hope not.
Nobody I've talked to believes that story about your spitting in Dean Smith's hand. And
right.
The book that reported it has been corrected in its new printing, and that's part of the reason you
Because I've always had a great respect for Dean. In fact, I told my son Chuck, I said, don't immolate me, immolate Dean. So, you know, I've always had a great deal of respect for him. And, I love him now, and I'm sorry he's not feeling good. And I try to talk to him as much as I can.
Well, that's an extraordinary compliment that you ask your coach, your son, to mold his career after Coach Smith. And I wish we had more time to talk about that. We will, if you'll talk some more.
Yeah, I'll
we'll,
talk.
We'll visit. And in the meantime,
you got to start paying me something. I'm a poor coach.
All right, Coach.
I didn't make $2 million like these guys now do. I'm just teasing.
You get the book out, and we'll start sending some money. Coach, thank you. We got to go. This has been Who's Talking, D.G. Martin, my guest, Coach Drizelle. Thanks for listening.